You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to the first hour of the Civic Media Spotlight. We begin with Daybreak with Brian and Jamie. They talk to fisheries specialist Titus Seelheimer from Wisconsin Sea Grant to talk about an invasive carp species and how it could negatively impact the Great Lakes. He also tells us about the efforts to keep the species from entering the lakes.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us this morning. You are listening to the Civic Media Network. If you're listening in Appleton and Oshkosh on WISS or Wausau on WXCO or even in Richland Center in WRCE, thank you so much for joining us. Hey, Brian, we have to take some more qualifiers because we are still breaking into spring with this multi-state text to win word of the hour. Until 8 o'clock on your Civic Media app, you can text us the word WAKE, W-A-K-E. Wake is your word until 8 o'clock, and that's going to qualify you for some really great stuff.
Yeah, you can win $200 today, and you can be qualified for the grand prize, which is a Verlo queen-size mattress pack, including not only the mattress set, but the mattress cover, some sheets, and two active dope pillows, so over $1,300 value. So again, about 24 minutes for this word. The word again is wake, as Jamie said, W-A-K-E, so get those in. Now, President Trump has said he's working to save the Great Lakes from invasive carp, but his administration is holding up money for a billion-dollar project to keep them at bay. He posted on Truth Social last week that he was working with Democratic Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer to, quote, save the Great Lakes from the rather violent and destructive Asian carp. He also said he was going to ask governors of Great Lakes states to join the fight. Well, that all sounds great, but the reality doesn't match the message. So what is happening with funding, and how big an issue are the Asian carp? We're joined by Titus Seelheimer. He is the fisheries outreach specialist at Wisconsin Sea Grant, and we're going to find that out. Titus, thanks for being here. This is something I haven't heard about these Asian carp in a while. For a while, they were big news all the time for people outside of your industry. So for those who aren't familiar, how big an issue are these invasive carp, and why are they such a problem?
Yeah, great question. They are one of the many invasive species that we're worried about, getting into the Great Lakes. And they've been in North America for about 50 years, and they were brought in originally they were kind of used for aquaculture in the South on fish farms or kind of wastewater treatment, but then they escaped into the Mississippi River system. And so they have been kind of slowly over that time moving north and approaching the Great Lakes. So the Illinois River especially, and then through the Chicago area waterway system, the canals there that connect Lake Michigan to the Mississippi River system. That's kind of this pinch point that we're mostly talking about.
So you said that they're approaching the Great Lakes and the system right now, but how serious is this current threat that we're seeing from the invasive carp?
I mean, it is definitely, I think, in two ways. Like it's definitely a big threat. Like anytime a new invasive species gets into the Great Lakes, like that, basically resets kind of what we know. And I'm actually in Michigan right now at a Great Lakes meeting, hearing about Lake Michigan all day yesterday and all five Great Lakes. And so, we know what we know right now, but if you bring in these new species, which are, the bighead carp, the silver carp especially, are these filter feeders. So they could, really change the food webs in the Great Lakes, especially places like Green Bay, Saginaw Bay, Lake Erie, where it's, there's a lot of nutrient loading, a lot of food for them. But then even like the harbors and the rivers of the Great Lakes, like that could be a new species that really shifts things and means that we have to kind of figure out, you know, what is going on now? Like, how do things work? So keeping them out is definitely, it is, you know, sort of the most effective way to, you know, protect the Great Lakes rather than try to deal with them later.
I'm sure a lot of fishermen are going to laugh at me for asking this, but define invasive species. I know basically it means species that weren't in an environment and then are introduced, but what is the damage that invasive species really can cause to, like you said, if they get into the Great Lakes or these harbors where they haven't been before?
Yeah. So, I mean, and actually like invasive is like, it's, there's this continuum of species. So we have, you know, the non-native species. So, you know, they came from somewhere else in the Great Lakes. A lot of those, like a lot of our top species that we worry about, zebra mussels, quagga mussels, round gobies, they came into the Great Lakes in the ballast water tanks of ships. But then there's also, you know, so they came from Europe, kind of the Eurasian area, in these ballast tanks when the St. Lawrence Seaway opened up. But, you know, they're non-native. Not necessarily, you know, we got about 190 non-native species in the Great Lakes now. Not all of them are, you know, what we would call invasive or have big noticeable impact. So even then, you can have a species that's new, but if it doesn't, you know, if you don't see the impacts, it's not always, you might not consider it invasive then. It's just sort of a non-native species. Okay.
We're joined by Titus Seilheimer. He is the fisheries outreach specialist at Wisconsin Sea Grant. Now, Brian had mentioned that the federal government has paused funding, even though that money was already approved. So what kind of impact is this going to have? How is this going to delay things, I guess, would be the question.
Yeah, so this the funding specifically is for what's called, it's the Brandon Road Lock and Dam Project. Okay. So this is within the Illinois or the Chicago area waterway system. And it's, so there's this big, you know, this is part of a big plan. I think the money we're talking about is like 200 some million out of a three-stage billion-dollar project. So it's a big project, but what they're going to do is upgrade this lock and dam. So that these are where the barges that can go from the Mississippi River into the Great Lakes that they use, and they're going to put a lot of, they're going to upgrade them so they have an electrical barrier, they're going to have a bubble curtain, they're going to have sound, they're going to be able to flush out species when the barges go through. So it is really kind of upgrading the system to prevent carp, but also other species from moving from the Mississippi River system into the Great Lakes. So, you know, it's been, you know, this is kind of the main, the highest risk point for species moving into the Great Lakes from the Mississippi River. So it's definitely, I think, an important step forward in preventing new species, you know, carp and other species in the future.
How do those barriers work? And it seems like I said, this is a story that's been going on for well over 10 years. It seems like they're moving kind of slow. We hear that these carp are invasive. Well, they really seem to be taking their time. How long a process is it for them to make their way up to this choke point? And then once they get to the choke point, what are they encountering?
Yeah. So, you know, I think, and part of this, you know, maybe we haven't heard about it as much in the last, you know, in the recent years is because they have kind of slowed down. So they, okay, you know, it was kind of this, you know, this, I don't know, I don't want to use, you know, I guess March, you know, it's this march north from where they started in, I think, Arkansas. And they're, yeah, you know, moving upstream and, you know, coming up, you know, fairly quickly through the Illinois River system. And really, you know, some of the impacts to the rivers are just that they're so abundant now and they kind of, you know, it's all carp in some of these areas. But they've actually kind of paused, like they got to a certain point in the Illinois River system, which is actually downstream of this Brandon Road Lock and Dam. And they've kind of, you know, haven't really moved upstream that much in advanced in, you know, it's something like 20 years now. So it has kind of slowed, which I think is a good thing. It gives us time to, you know, get this project in place. And, you know, it's kind of nice they're cooperating with us and the, you know, the time it takes for some of these massive Army Corps of Engineers projects to finish. So, yeah, so it's, you know, but Then just upstream of this Brandon Road Lock and Dam is the electrical barrier, which you've, you know, heard about over the years. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, that's been in place for quite a while. And that is, you know, this electrical barrier that keeps the fish from swimming up towards the lake. They get stunned and then they would just kind of float back downstream. So it's not like we're totally there aren't any defenses, but yeah, this would add another level to that.
Titus Seilheimer is our guest. He's the fisheries outreach specialist at Wisconsin Sea Grant. If invasive carp do actually make it into the Great Lakes, Titus, what does that essentially mean for Wisconsin fishing, the industry around it, and maybe even the economy?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, carp in the Great Lakes is it's a big question. Like, I think there's a lot of uncertainty there. If you're following the other Great Lakes stories, things like the kind of decline of Lake Whitefish, especially in the main part of Lake Michigan, that is being driven by other invasive species like the quagga mussels. And, you know, kind of the interesting thing about these carp, like they can get to 100 pounds, like they're big
wow.
fish.
My gosh.
But they're just swimming along, you know, filter feeding, like they're eating the littlest stuff. They're eating algae and plankton, but they can get really big. And, you know, so in one sense, some of their easiest food isn't, you know, quite available because of the mussels. But, I think it's definitely they would be feeding and they would be growing. And if they, you know, would probably, you know, go to places that have more food availability, like Green Bay, the Fox River, harbors, rivers, on the Wisconsin side, especially, like that's kind of where we have, there's probably a lot more food for them. So it could really change, you know, I think how people enjoy, you know, rivers and the lakes, and but can also shift some of the food web stuff and impact, you know, the desirable fish species that we want to see.
Titus, are they good for anything else? Like, can they be harvested? I remember one time having a carp sandwich, but I don't think it's a kind of food that most fish that most food are going for. Do they serve any other purpose?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, interest, like in Asia, where they're, you know, they're actually farmed there, they're a highly desirable food fish over there, and kind of the backbone, I guess, of their fish farming in some places. And, you know, here, I think, you know, for us, like we hear carp and we're like, ooh, you know,
yeah,
like you hear carp, you think common carp, you think, you know, this bottom feeding fish that's full of contaminants and maybe you don't want to eat it. But you know, these are, because they're filter feeding, they actually grow really fast. They have a much low, like they have low contaminants. And I guess the, you know, as a food, like I've had, I think silver carp tacos one time, and it was, you know, you've seasoned the meat, it's really good. And, you know, so people are, you know, there is kind of an interest in marketing them as a food fish. Kopi okay. is the new name, COPI.
Okay.
So if you see, yeah, if you see Kopi on the menu, you're eating one of these invasive carp. So
interesting, interesting.
Fighting the power, doing yes. doing your bit to save ecology.
We've got about a minute left, Titus. For people who boat or maybe fish, is there anything that they should or shouldn't do to help maybe prevent the spread of the invasive carp?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the basic steps that we all do as boaters and anglers, you know, don't move water from one place to another, you know, drain your boat, clean your, you know, even your canoe or your kayak, clean it off because there could be stuff in there. You know, don't dump your bait bucket because they've actually found, you know, some of these little carp in with bait. So, yeah.
All right. Well, Titus Seilheimer is a fisheries outreach specialist at Wisconsin Sea Grant. Seagrant.wisc.edu is the website. You can go check it out. Enjoy your conference, Titus. We enjoyed having you here. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's 7:48 right now. You're listening to Daybreak.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
We stay right here on the Civic Media Spotlight with Daybreak with Brian and Jamie. New data shows that voters are realigning where their priorities lay. Is it property taxes or school funding? As the property taxes continually increase and the economy puts more strain on homeowners, that priority is shifting.
Solid, better than expected. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. It is 8:22. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Tell us at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. What concerns you more, property taxes in Wisconsin or school funding, and why? The reason we ask you that is because, according to a February poll by the Marquette University Law School, Wisconsin voters' attitudes toward property taxes and public schools, public school funding, are shifting, with most saying they are more concerned about reducing their property tax bills than sending money to local schools when given the choice. This concern is the highest recorded in more than a decade, and it makes sense.
Yeah.
Because once you get to a certain point in your life, if you don't have kids in school anymore, or you've never had children, or whatever the reason, but you see you have a home, you're lucky enough to own your house, and your taxes keep going up and up, that's your main concern. And it is not selfish for people to say, hey, I'm all for kids getting an education, mm-hmm. but man, my taxes are killing me.
I mean, and we've pointed this out on the program too. It affects homeowners, obviously, but it also affects anybody who rents, because somebody mm-hmm. owns those properties and, you know, their property taxes are going to go up and they're going to have to offset that at some point. So it's not just homeowners. It's also, if you're a renter, you're also going to end up paying more, which is why we start seeing some of these astronomical rental prices throughout the state of Wisconsin, yep. right? But it's interesting because in the same poll, 57% of people said that they would be inclined to vote against a referendum to increase taxes for local schools. 43% said they would vote to pass a referendum. This is going to be interesting because coming up on this April 7th election, and by the way, early voting starts today if you want to cast your vote for that April 7th election. But I've got to check my facts on this, but off the top of my head, I believe there are 70 schools this year in the state of Wisconsin and this election that are going to have referendums on the ballot mm-hmm. in some way, shape, or form so that they can, you know, have proper funding for whether it's their operational costs or whether it's for, you know, maintenance of the school or, you know, adding things that they need to the facility itself. This concern over property tax levels comes at a time when people are being hammered right now, right? I mean, we're talking inflation. We've got the tariffs, the higher home values, now the rising gas prices, the uncertainty with all goods as they have to travel from parts of the country through a war-torn area and a strait that isn't opening no matter what the president says. So, this comes at, I think, at a very tumultuous time for a lot of people when people are already being forced to really decide, is it worth even owning a home? Can I even own a home?
Well, it's not that it's worth it, but can they? We talked about it the other day that the average home ownership has gone up from 30 years old for the first-time buyer to 40 years old for a first-time buyer. So it's tougher and tougher to do that. And while in theory, everybody, I think, is for education being funded. Mm-hmm. The problem does become a very personal one. And if I'm faced with the choice, you know, my daughter is out of school. She's grown. And while we went to public school and we chose to live in a place that had very high property taxes so that she could go to good public schools, the minute she was done, we left. We left to move and move to a place that we didn't have to pay those exorbitant taxes. And I would be hard pressed now to move back to a place where my taxes kept going up to fund schools, not because I don't value it, but because my bottom line mm-hmm. has changed so drastically. And I think that's what a lot of people, they come to that point. And it's almost the lesser of two evils.
Right.
Well, will I vote against this referendum and know that something is going to suffer at schools? And I know we were just talking about Green Bay having to cut possibly some fine arts programs. Knowing that, or saying, well, then I'd have to move because I can't afford right. my taxes here.
I mean, and let's be realistic. Most people, even if you live in a community, even if you don't have kids in the school district, you want kids to have good schools, right?
Sure.
You do. But Property taxes in Wisconsin are already among the highest in the country. In fact, we're in the top 15 for how much we pay in property taxes throughout this state. So for a lot of families and for a lot of individuals, it's just not feasible. And I think that's where those tough choices literally come in, because we know that the schools have to rely heavily on those property taxes because of how the system's set up. So when that state funding is falling short or isn't predictable, the districts are forced to go to voters who just can't fathom doing this anymore or seeing those increases in their monthly bill. And let's also be realistic. This legislature had the opportunity to do something before they gaveled out. And I know the negotiations are still ongoing between the Republicans and the Democrats on how to use that surplus. They had the opportunity to alleviate some of this, and they chose to gavel out instead of making it easier for homeowners or giving them some sort of relief on their property tax bill.
And we talk about shrinking populations here in Wisconsin all the time. You can't keep going back to the same well. And sooner or later, people will start to leave. Then the people who are here are going to have to bear even more of a burden. There has to be a better way. You mentioned it. The legislature is not doing what they're supposed to do. We've got all of this extra money. Some of it needs to go to tax relief because people are getting tired.
Mm-hmm.
And once people get tired enough, they decide they're going to go somewhere else where
yes.
they're not going to be so put upon tax-wise. I saw it when I lived in California. People were fleeing California by the millions to get to, they would go to Nevada because there was no tax. The taxes are lower. That's going to happen in Wisconsin soon, and you're not going to like the results.
And by the way, in that same Marquette poll, voters picked property tax levels as their chief concern when given the choice since 2022, and that number just keeps growing over time. It tells you that we have a serious problem in this state, and right now, I don't see anybody really doing much to alleviate it for anybody. Either side of the aisle. It's 8:29 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Some weird mailings coming to Germantown. We'll tell you all about it on the Civic Media Network.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we have Nightlight with Pete and Greg. Pete and Greg are joined by Frank Hermans of Let Me Be Frank Productions on his big upcoming show, which is Shopko, Say Hello to a Goodbye.
Welcome back to Nightlight. I'm Pete Schwabe. Joining me, as always, is Greg Bach and Dom Lee, holding down the fort in Madison, working the board, producing the show. We've got a great one tonight, folks. Martin Alvarado from the Madison Public Library will be here in hour two giving book recommendations. We're going to read your text for our question of the night, which is, who is the most annoying voice in sports? Text line is ringing. Does it ring? I don't know. Off the hook. We'll read those after the top of the hour. But right now, I'm very excited to welcome our first guest of the night. He is a fan favorite and one of my favorites here at Nightlight, and he joins us over the stream from Northeast Wisconsin, the legendary Mr. Frank Hermans. Hey, buddy.
Hola, it's the Frank, man, in brilliant Wisconsin. my home internet, I believe, is not as strong as it should be, but thanks for having me, Pete. Love doing your show, and love to talk about new stuff coming up.
Buddy, I'm telling you, any Frank is better than no Frank. And I love your website, because I think I've told you this before. I was looking at your upcoming shows, and there's a moment where you run the cursor over some icon, and it's your laugh going, ha ha.
Yeah,
it scared the living daylights out of me today. I was not expecting that, but I love it.
Yeah, you just run it over my face, and it's kind of a funny story. 15 years ago, when I redid the website, it's been a long time. I need to do it, but the young lady who was helping me from PMI goes, "God, Frank, we need to put your laugh in there." I go, "Okay." I recorded it on her phone one time, ha-ha, and that was it.
If you're not expecting it, though, and you have your computer turns up, it can make you go a couple feet in the air. Really freak me out today.
Yeah.
It's great to have you, buddy. Let's do an icebreaker. Do you have a sports person or someone in that world, Frank, whose voice really annoys you, whether it's what they say or the way they say it or their actual voice?
Dick Vitale. That comes right to mind.
Wow.
I know. I got to tell you, baby, I couldn't even say, could he say it anymore, baby? You know, the Villanova Wildcats are great. I can't tell you that, but whoa, baby.
It's so accurate. Wow.
Man, if he was from Northeast Wisconsin, Frank, you'd have your next show there. That was pretty good.
Yeah, thanks, man. I tell you what.
You should just do that as an impression.
I should.
Like, yeah.
It's almost like you're talking from, there's another character who sounds just like this, and I'm trying to think who it is. Come on, Pete, help me.
It sounds like a Looney Tunes character.
Yeah.
Make sure you throw in plugs for Planet Fitness, Oberto Beef, and Hooters, too, while you're at it.
That's right, Dick. But I got to tell you, when that commercial came out, the first thing that came to mind was, he's still alive?
Yeah.
Sorry.
He's cashing that check, baby.
Baby, yeah. He's got baby. That one glass eye that's always looking the other way.
He's a caricature of himself now. So let's start off, Frank, with your new show. I love the title. You have such great, I just want you to tell people about it because it's so funny. And it's a little heartfelt, too, because I miss the institution you're writing about. Tell us about Hello Shopko. Or Hello Shopko, say hello to a goodbye.
Yeah, their tagline was, they had many taglines, but at the end it was say hello to a goodbye, but I spell it B-Y-E. Hello to a goodbye. Of course, Shopko Stores, that was our local mall in Wisconsin. 139 stores at one time, all the way out to Nebraska, 26 states. They started business in 1961, and in 2019 they closed 139 stores due to bankruptcy. They kept the Shopko optical stores going, but my memories are of the Shopko lady. In fact, Karen McDermott did a couple shows with her at St. Norbert College back in the day, and we have a character in the show who is the Shopko lady. We don't necessarily say it's Karen, but they're called the Shopko lady. And one of the things I did with this show is it's about a true story that really happened at Shopko store number 4, Green Bay East on Main Street. I'll divulge that story in a little bit. But one thing that we did with this show is it's like a Seinfeld episode. So I play Jerry and I talk like Jerry. And then we got Kramer's in the show. Elaine's in the show. So we do all the funny bits from Seinfeld based around Shopko store experience.
I love that. That's great.
Yeah.
It's funny, Frank, that you bring that up, that the show is based on that, because I watched a video the other day talking about the rise and fall. Actually, two of them. One about the rise and fall of Kmart and the other about the rise and fall of Sears. And it's weird because I can remember when Shopko, Kmart, and Sears were everywhere. And then one day they're just like, yeah, we're out of business now. Goodbye, everyone. Pack it on up. Everything's on sale. Goodbye. Done. That's it.
Well, it's funny you say that because, you know, really the pandemic, you know, really screwed retail. And yeah. Shopko closed its doors before the pandemic, which is ironic.
Yeah.
And everybody else. Hey, I just found this out, guys. There is one Kmart left and it's in Hawaii. There is one Kmart left.
Wow.
But okay. Yeah, all the stores, Montgomery Ward, Sears and Roebuck. I mean, the list goes on. Gimbel's.
Oh, wow.
And we make fun of that in the show. And one of the things we do make fun of is, you know, in fact, it's an old joke. Macy makes fun of people who shop at Target. Target makes fun of people who shop at Shopko. Shopko makes fun of people who work at Fleet Farm. Fleet Farm makes fun of people who shop at the dollar store. Who does the dollar store make fun of? Goodwill?
I remember in Marinette at the dollar store like 5 years ago, I swear to God, I have this picture somewhere. Steaks, $2.
Oh, like, no.
I've been paying like $3 for my steaks like a sucker for the last 10 years. Frank, you know, I love where you come up with your ideas. They're so local and you really get people invested in the shows. And I want to say this for those of you who, first of all, if you've never been to the Meyer Theater in Green Bay, it is a very special place. It's just this beautiful thing that this beautiful theater right in downtown Green Bay. That's where most of Frank's shows are. And if you want a road trip, it's worth it, because I went to Frank's Christmas show 2 years ago, brought the wife and kids. It was the perfect Frank, that was so magical, because it was like the Meyer Theater is the perfect place to have a Christmas show. Mm-hmm. It's a great theater. The show is great. I highly recommend, even if you know Shopko or just want a good laugh, it's worth a road trip to Green Bay.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny that you talk about the Meyer Theater, built in 1930, opened up on Valentine's Day, and then, you know, in 1980 it became a triplex theater, and then it closed down for 10 years and the pipes were bursting, and the Meyer Foundation came in, put $12 million in the place. They ripped all the plaster off the walls. They found out that it was an old Mediterranean style look, and they kept that with the gold, you know, embossing everywhere. And it was the last Fox Theater built in 1930. Isn't that crazy?
Wow. Yeah. My goodness. Oh, yeah. that sounds like a gorgeous, gorgeous place. There's nothing like old theaters. Like when you're in Milwaukee, you go to the Pabst or the Riverside or the High Life Theater. Now it's called the High Life Theater, but you just walk in, you can feel the history and you're like, I'm going to go see this band tonight, but who was playing 100 years ago? Because there was someone like vaudeville was playing here 100 years ago. It's beautiful. It's like an old church.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's funny you say that because on that stage at the Meyer Theater, they had Johnny Cash back in the day. They did vaudeville. Yes, they did. They had the troops coming through. But then, you know, the Depression hit and it closed down again in 1933 and it had to reopen again from community. You know, Green Bay, you know, the community seems to come with money, you know, for the Packers or for a theater, you know, and they kept this thing alive. We're one of the lucky ones. We've been at the Meyer Theater now 20 years. Oh, my goodness. We're the main tenant. We do 80 shows a year there and we produce and write five original comedy musicals, jukebox musicals. Like this show, Shopko, is based in the 70s, early 80s. So it's all great songs from David Bowie, from Diana Ross. What's that song we do? Tom sings. What's that song called? By McKinsey. And anyway, my wife's in the room. I'm trying to get some information.
That's great. Also the star of the show and a very talented Amy.
Yes, my wife, Hurricane Smith. In fact, I'm going to ask her to maybe sing harmony with me on a song. She's giving me the look, maybe not. So we'll see.
She's like, honey, I'm cooking up these $2 steaks. What do you want me to do right now?
Our guest is Frank Hermans. He is a Green Bay theater legend. He writes original stuff and performs them at the Meyer Theater. Definitely worth checking out. Frank, you have another show coming up in May I wanted to ask you about because ever since I learned about the existence of this this event that happened in the 60s, Sputnik, I've been fascinated by it. Part of a Soviet space crashed right outside an art museum in Manitowoc. They have Sputnik Fest every year. It's a blast. Tell us about the Sputnik landing in Manitowoc and what you did with that.
Yeah, Sputnik the musical, I call it. And I actually wrote this show during COVID and we were supposed to premiere it in Manitowoc and got shut down. So we did it to a sparse crowd at the Meyer Theater. I thought I'd bring it back. It's the true unabridged fictional story of Sputnik. So in 1966, 13 pounds of the first satellite, Sputnik, fell on 8th Street in Manitowoc. And two policemen noticed that... They noticed the small explosion and that the road was hot. And they're like, what is this? And there's actually a spot on the road they have marked on 8th Street. This is where Sputnik fell. Well, it was a huge, huge news story. It was national headlines. The Russians wanted it back, but it was just a pile of sludge. And in fact, the actual piece of Sputnik is in Chicago, I believe, at the art museum, and they made a recreation of it that's on display at the Rars Museum in Manitowoc. So I wrote a fictional story, and I got all the great characters. JFK plays the mayor of Manitowoc. He talks, you know, John F. His name's not John F. Kennedy, but he has that accent. And then we have Marilyn Monroe as one of the characters, and then the two police officers. You remember that police show? Herman Munster was in the show. Fred Gwynne.
Car 54, where are you?
54. So my two police characters are those guys. And it just talks about the life and times. And then Boris and Natasha Fatal from Bullwinkle are in the show. And they're coming. They come to get the Sputnik back because the secrets. There's a secret in there that the Soviet, the mother country, wants back. It's just a hilarious show with great music from the 50s and 60s.
That sounds amazing. That sounds so much fun.
Yeah, it's a hoot.
Yeah.
Greg. Okay, so if you want to see the Sputnik show, Sputnik the Musical in Manitowoc, that's May 14th. Shopko, say hello to a goodbye at the Meyer Theater, April 9th through the 26th. You've got those shows. I have to ask you, Frank, we have to do a break, and then we'll. I want to ask you about another show after a quick break. But right now, I texted you this a couple weeks ago. Have you seen Epic yet, the Elvis movie?
You know, it's funny that you say that. We were going to go one day. I was going to go with my buddy Paul, who's a Neil Diamond impersonator, and I didn't, but I hear it's fantastic. I guess I'm going to have to wait for it to come out in Prime. You see it?
I did, and I would say if you can find a theater that still has it, and I told Greg this recently, I never understood, like I know he's Elvis, he's iconic, and he's just this legendary guy, and I love when you sing his songs, and I like his songs a lot, but I never really understood why he was so great until I saw this movie, because it's just him performing with his band and his backup singers, and you really see what a talented musician he is and what a performer he is. The guy just does not stop moving, so... I would love to talk to you after you see it, but we're going to do a very short break. Frank Hermans is here, folks. His show, Say Hello to a Goodbye, about the closing of the Shopko store is kind of sad, but as Frank always does, it'll be hilarious and great music. That's at the Meyer Theater, April 9th through the 26th. We'll talk to Frank about a few more things coming up after this very short break. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Love it. Well done, Tom. Hey, welcome back to Nightlight. I'm Pete Schwabe. Sitting across the state from me is Greg Bach, who is... you're not playing the drums, Greg. I always worry when you're not drumming that something's amiss. There we go. Okay, he's good. All is good in the world. Frank Hermans is with us, folks. He is the legendary Frank Hermans, founder of Let Me Be Frank Productions, and a very prolific playwright and performer and great singer. He joins us periodically here on Nightlight. If you listen, you know that. He is with us via the stream from Northeast Wisconsin. We were talking about his show that opens April 14th called Say Hello to a Good a Shopko. Hello, Shopko. Say hello to a good to a goodbye. It's from April 9th through the 26th at the Meyer. It's going to be a great show. Frank, you told us during the break that that's based on a true story.
Yeah, back in 1982, my brother had a couple hoodlum friends, and the Nintendos had just come out. Nintendos were really hot. And back then, there was no cameras or security in these Shopko stores. So what these kids did is they hid in the clothing racks. And when Shopko locked up, they stole or took all the Nintendos, okay? They took that night, they took all the Nintendos from the store. When they got there, they were all gone. And the only reason why they got caught is they sold them to their friends. And for $75, because they were $150 at the time.
Yes, they were. Yep.
And the kid, the mom comes into his room and says, "Hey, we can't afford that. Where'd you get that?" Well, he narked the kid out, and they got busted. I'm not naming names, but this is a true story. It happened at Green Bay East, 1982. They stole all the Nintendos, but they were busted and did some juvie.
Whoa.
I remember when I was a kid, like, oh, he went to juvie. Oh, wow. What did he do? Stole Nintendos.
What is the statute of limitations on stealing video games? You're probably, but if you already did the time, I guess. That's hilarious.
I'm sure both are upstanding citizens to this day.
Oh, my goodness. That sounds absolutely amazing. They stayed in until that is gutsy to me. Like that's not just saying like on a Saturday night, let's do it. That's planning. That's a heist.
Premeditated. Yeah.
If you remember at Shopko, they had the circular racks with the clothes around, and you could actually, my wife remembers hiding in between those racks and mom couldn't find her. So it's true that they did this and nobody noticed them. And there was no, The only security system they had at Shopko was they would say, Mr. Roberts. That meant loss prevention, that someone was stealing something. There was no cameras. You know, it was a prime time to steal back then.
I missed my window, damn it.
Man, I was such a good kid back then. I was just hiding in those clothes waiting for my mom to find me. And then you heard those words, will a Gregory Bach please come to the front? Your mother is waiting for you. Like, oh, I'm in trouble now. I was trying to be whimsical.
Yeah. Yes.
Frank, before we let you go, you've got another show. I love when you do the Elvis Reba and your kind of tribute to these famous great singers. You did it in Marinette twice in the last year, which was fantastic. You're performing, I love the name of this, Meats Opera House. Where is that?
Okay, Meats Opera House is an old hall that was built in the 1920s for polka bands in a place called St. Nazian, Wisconsin.
Oh, it, nice. Oh.
St. Nazian was the home of JFK Prep and the most prolific basketball scorer in Wisconsin state history. Steve Crowley played there in the 80s. It closed in 1982, but this hall is still there, and I was just dropping off a poster, driving through Valder's. I thought, let's go through St. Nazian. And the mom of the owner is a season ticket holder. And I said, she said, you want to see our hall? I walked back there. It fits about 250. We walked back there. I go, hey, we should do a show here. And well, we did Elvis and Reba 2 weeks ago, and now we're coming back May 8th. I'm actually bringing Neil Diamond along and George Jones and Cher. Oh. So, yeah, we're doing a show there.
All right, that's awesome. May 8th. You got tons of chances to see Frank and his band of all-stars. May 8th at Meats Opera House in how do you say that again?
Nazias.
Okay, Nazias. And then you've got
plural, but it doesn't spell that way or sound that way.
Yeah,
the spelling of that town is off-putting at best.
Yes. Yeah.
Hello Shopko, say goodbye to a goodbye is at the Meyer Theater April 9th through the 26th. And then you've got Sputnik the Musical, and you're performing that in Manitowoc, which is fun, on May 14th.
We're actually going to be performing that at the Meyer Theater, but in the small backstage. It's dinner theater. We're going back to our roots, how we started dinner theater back in 2000 at the Sports Corner in the SC Grand.
Wow. So
intimate show. We can only fit 150 folks a night. There's six shows. It's Thursday, Friday, Saturday matinee, Saturday night, and then Sunday matinee. Dinner and a show and Sputnik right in your face.
Oh my God, I love it. Dude, you are the best. Thank you so much for being with us on the stream tonight. Now you can say whatever you want to Amy once you're off the air. We hope things are well and good on the home front.
Did you hear her laugh? She didn't. She heard you, but you did hear her laugh.
No, we're on our way to go ahead. Sorry.
I said we're on our way to rehearsal after this.
Oh, of course. Right. Yeah. Well, say goodbye to or say hello to every. I'm getting your titles mixed up. Say hello to everyone in the family and with Let Me Be Frank Productions. Always a blast, pal. Come back anytime.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
You got it.
You too, man. Take it easy. Have a great night.
Bye-bye.
Oh, that was fun.
All right. Well, before we get out of here, that was amazing. He's got to come back, and I want him to talk about his history because I feel like that is an amazing lineup. There's so many shows, and as you said, they just sell out. Like, people are just enjoying them so much. I can't wait to have him back. But before we get out of here, we're going to take a really quick moment to get some snacks, get some hydration. We've got the news coming up. Don't forget, this is your last chance, last moment to text in BIRD, B-I-R-D, for the Break in the Spring Text to Win Multi-State Contest. Your chance to win $200 today and possibly may win a Verlo mattress set. But you got to text the word in right now via the Civic Media app. BIRD is the word, B-I-R-D. When we come back, we'll be talking about the question of the night. And Dom has a story as well. Oh, so don't go anywhere. You're listening to Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach here on Civic Media. Stay tuned and stay close.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.